Welcome to the premiere edition of Mac Voices. I'm your host, Chuck Joyner, the editor of the Mug Center, the Mac user group resource site. It is quite possible that you're wondering how Mac Voices got into your playlist or on your iPod, since you don't recognize either the name or the opening music. Well, I can help you with that. You see, Mac Voices is the successor to my old show, The User Group Report. The User Group Report was retired last week, and Mac Voices will carry us into the future with new features, a new format, and a revised focus. To help ease the transition for our subscribers, and to make sure they know about the change, Mac Voices will be distributed in both old RSS feeds, the one for the iTunes Music Store, as well as the Mug Center's main RSS feed that contains both the show as well as the regular news items. This will only be the case for that transition period, so you might want to visit our new dedicated website at macvoices.com and subscribe to the Mac Voices feed to be sure that you're ready. In a very short time, we'll have a link up to subscribe in the iTunes Music Store automatically, but if you can't wait, you can sign up using the RSS link. Now to the new format. Mac Voices will continue the User Group Report's history of bringing you news from the front lines of the global Mac community, but if you've been a regular listener, then you know that our coverage of the Mac community long ago expanded beyond just Mac user groups. The new show and new format will allow us to deliver that coverage in a superior fashion, drawing in information and guests not just from the enthusiast perspective, but also from the Mac and Apple media, the vendors who provide hardware, software, and services for the Mac, and more. I wanted a couple special guests to kick off Mac Voices, and I couldn't think of anyone better than Warren Williams of the iWork Users Group and Doug Adams of Doug's Scripts. Warren is in the process of managing a transition of his own, the transition of the AppleWorks User Group to the iWork Users Group. Leading the world's largest Mac user group, and one of the most important given the combined market penetration of AppleWorks and iWork, Warren's group has put together a new resource to help you harness the power of Pages. Warren will tell us about that and deliver the first of many iWork tips when he joins us. Even if you are not into AppleScript or Automator, you will want to hear from Doug Adams. For a long time, Doug has been operating one of the very best AppleScript resource sites out there, DougsScripts.com. Doug is here to tell us about the genesis of his site, how it has grown and now supports Automator, and why you need to check it out even if you're not completely comfortable with Apple Scripts or have a complete idea of what they can do for you. Once again, welcome to the first edition of Mac Voices. I couldn't think of a better way to start out the new show than to have an old friend on who has something new, really, to talk about, and new in many ways, and that's Warren Williams, the president of the iWork Users Group and the president of the AppleWorks Users Group as well. Warren, welcome to the first edition of Mac Voices. It's great to have you.
Hi, Chuck. It's good to be with you.
So, Warren, you all don't have enough to do starting up a new user group based on iWork. You go out and you create a design kit for Pages.
Well, I wish I could take credit for it, but actually it's one of our staff members who's very creative, had this idea that Pages had so many capabilities, and it came with a few stationary business letterheads. And he had this idea that he could do this design kit where people could create their own professional-looking letterheads and other matched business stationery using Pages as the vehicle.
Warren, is this the first third-party product for Pages?
I don't know if it is. It very well could be. I believe it's the first design kit of this type, and I don't know of any third-party products, but you know me. I wouldn't want to go out on a limb and say this is the first, and then we'd find somebody's out there with something. But it is an early product for Pages, I will say that.
All right, so we'll call it one of the first, definitely.
One of the first, yeah. You're always more succinct than I am.
Give the listeners an idea of exactly what is in this design kit, because we don't want to mislead them. This is not something that really has to do with graphics as much as it does to do with a production document.
right. It's a CD that is designed for professional offices, doctors or accountants or small business owners. And you always admire these very nice stationery designs that large companies use, where they have matching business cards, matching letterheads, matching memo pads. And what we did was put together 100 different designs along 100 different themes, some geometric themes, some text-only themes. And what you do is you look at this collection of 100 different designs, pick the one that's most attractive to you, and then you get four templates in each design, and you just replace the placeholder text with your own name, business name, and other contact information. And that they're laid out so you can print directly on Avery business card stock, and you can print directly on number 10 envelopes and on letterheads, and you actually create your own memo pads. And you can either create PDFs you send to a commercial printer if you really want large numbers of these envelopes and letterhead, or you can just use them as your own templates. So when you create a letter, you bring up your letterhead, and it's all set to go with a text for you to add your own text. You already have added your own design. You've modified the existing design elements so it reflects your own business.
And this kit comes with a what I think is a staggering number of choices.
Yeah, there are 400. There are over 400 templates on the CD. Again, four for each of the 100-plus themes. So you just pick your theme, and you're not going to want all 400 templates. It's part of giving you the range of choice we want the Pages user to have. Because everybody has a different idea of what a good letterhead looks like. So you could just go through and pick something that appeals to your taste and your business. There are some unique things in there. There are some things designed for auto shops. There are things designed for sports-related organizations and businesses. But most of them are more conventional, something that a doctor could use or a retailer could use, or an at-home business person could use. So you don't have to go out and hire some professional artist to go ahead and create your design for your business.
Now, when you say it's themed towards sports teams, for example, or whatever, are you talking about having clip art?
Yeah, so some of them come with clip art, but the clip art is all placeholder. It all can be replaced. So the one I'm thinking of, for example, happens to have a basketball on it. But you can just find baseball clip art, drop it in place, and you have something for your Little League team or your Little League organization. Or if you want to do some sort of a fantasy league and you want to have a more professional look to it, you can take that design and drop in an appropriate clip art for that. But most of the items don't have topic-specific clip art. They have geometric designs and other designs that would be more general in application.
What about the graphics that we're talking about? And we use the term clip art, which I think sometimes doesn't always do justice to quality artwork. Is this all editable within Pages, or do you need to export, say, some of the artwork or some of the elements out to something like Photoshop to do the modification?
Final work. You get your graphics independently. So if you want to do a graphical letterhead, baseball people and other sports people and skaters and so forth usually have their own source of clip art. And this is not a clip art collection. You would take your clip art that you would have for your specific activity and drop it in place of the placeholder. As you know, Pages supports placeholders. So there's a graphic there that is just a placeholder, and you can just, any graphic you lay on it will automatically be resized to that size and will automatically fit into the design, which is the beauty of using a placeholder. You don't have to go ahead and tweak everything to get it rotated the way you want and the size you want and so forth. So it's set up to be used generically We don't expect many people to use the existing clip art that's in there. Now, let me say, most of these do not have clip art because most businesses don't want specific clip art in their letterheads and designs. They want something that's more generic because a business doesn't want to be tied down into one aspect of their business. So, for an example, an orthodontist who wanted this is probably not going to put clip art on this. They're probably going to pick up a professional looking design because everybody knows what an orthodontist does, and they don't need a smiling face on their business card if you picture it that way.
And you know, having been through this a few times, it's surprising how difficult it is to put in some of those subtle elements to make a fine, classy-looking, professional-looking letterhead or business card or notepad or whatever. It's not just a matter of dropping in a rule here and a line there. It's really a matter of doing it, as you say, tastefully and in a manner that has some design theory behind it.
It always amazes me how an artist, I'm always impressed by artists. I am not one. I know what I like when I see it. I can't tell people why I like it. But I watched this artist work, and these things sort of came out of the background the way a writer sits down with a blank piece of paper and creates a story on a blank piece of paper. I'm watching this artist, and he just had all these ideas, and he'd finish one, and he'd look at it, and he'd tweak it, and he'd get it the way he'd like. He'd set it aside, and he'd think for 10 minutes, and out would come another one in another hour and a half, and it was just amazing to watch.
It is fascinating to watch people with different talents and the way they create, whether they are writing the written word or whether they're doing design, as you're referring to. And the results, you can always tell something that you and I would create, because apparently we both have the same design background. I'm sure sorry about that, Warren. But yeah, it really does show.
I work comical designs for pages.
Yeah, this was one that you and I did not collaborate on. We just both probably are looking at.
Uh-huh.
Warren, how do the listeners go about seeing some samples of this or ordering it for themselves?
They can jump on the iWug website. It's www.iworkusers.org. And the easiest way is to go directly to put a slash after it. Oh, we made this easy, didn't we? And then shop/merchant4.html. Call Chuck at home some night, and he'll give you the URL.
No, don't call Chuck at home. Chuck will put it in the show notes for you so that you can find it very easily.
You can just send an email to orders@iwugusers.org. Since people listening to this are user group members, there's special user group pricing on this. It's the retail's $49.95, but user group members can buy it for $29.95. So if you jump on the iworkusers.org website and find your way over there, select the iWug member price. We will honor that for all user group members.
Thank you. That's terrific. I know everyone will appreciate it. And I also know that if anyone out there is familiar with the templates and the products that you produce for the AppleWorks user group, they're going to have no hesitation in taking a good hard look at this, or maybe just ordering it right off without even bothering to look. Everything you all put out is just such high quality and so useful if it's a product that particular individual needs.
Well, thank you. We're a user group. Everything's satisfaction guaranteed or all your money back. We don't want anybody to be unhappy with anything that they get. Just part of the user group community. How about rewarding people for having listened to this with a quick tip about iWork?
Warren, you kind of snuck up on me, because that's something that we want to let the users know. Warren's jumping ahead, but Warren has agreed to come back on a regular basis to Mac Voices and provide just that, some quick tips for Pages and the iWork series of products as it develops, so that you can get a little more involved and find it more useful. So, Warren, kick us off with the very first one.
Let me give you one that ties together our dual interest in AppleWorks and in iWork. As most people know, if you've used iWork, it can open AppleWorks word processing documents. What some people don't know, it only takes native documents. It will not open AppleWorks templates. But if you change the suffix on the file from CWS.CWS, which is the template suffix, to .CWK, which is the document suffix, Pages is very happy opening AppleWorks templates. So if you want to, if you have a template you want to move over into Pages, just go to the file in the Finder, change the suffix to .CWK, and go over to Pages and open it with Pages, and it works just fine.
And the formatting and everything comes right in?
Everything comes right in. Pages thinks it's a document, which it is. Unlike Pages templates, there's no internal difference between an AppleWorks document and an AppleWorks template. It's just the suffix on the file name. And if you just change the suffix, Pages is perfectly happy looking at that document as a that template as a document. Now, again, this only works for word processing documents because the current version of iWork, and I don't know anything about the future, so don't think I'm hinting at anything, only opens AppleWorks word processing documents. It does not open databases or spreadsheets or drawing documents and so forth.
Well, that's definitely a useful tip, and I'm sure that the AppleWorks users out there who are looking to convert over are going to appreciate that. It just makes it so much easier to start using Pages, and something everyone really should take a look at because the iWork series is so much more powerful, and it's only going to get better. And as Warren said, neither one of us know anything. It just appears to be a very logical step that Apple has to pursue sooner or later. So get used to it because the future's here.
It handles so many things so much nicer. Of course, it doesn't have, you know, all the features of AppleWorks, and I want to say yet. We're all waiting for the other shoes to drop. We hope there's a closet full of shoes that'll drop one at a time, probably. But it handles fonts so much so nicely. It takes advantage of the Quartz technology in OS X and so on. It's just a newer product.
Well, Warren, thank you so much for being our guest on the first show. We really appreciate it, and we're going to look forward to talking to you much more often than we have in the past and getting more information on the iWork series as it comes out.
Chuck, thanks so much for the opportunity and for all you do for the user group community. I wish you best of luck with your new format. I'm sure it's going to be great.
Folks, we've been talking to and being abused by Warren Williams, the president of the iWork Users Group. You can visit them at
www.iworkusers.org.
Warren, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
I'll talk to you, Jeff. Bye.
Next up on the first edition of Mac Voices is someone I've wanted to talk to for a long time because I've been a fan of his site because it actually makes one part of the Mac OS available to me that I don't know a lot about. I'd like to welcome Doug Adams of Doug's Apple Scripts to Mac Voices. Doug, welcome to Mac Voices. It's great to have you.
Well, thanks, Chuck. It's nice to be asked, and it's a pleasure to talk with you today.
Well, as I said, I've been a fan of your site because I'm not an Apple scripter. I've just never been able to get into it. But your site allows me to do some really cool things taking advantage of AppleScript. How did you get into doing this site? And I've watched it evolve. How have you evolved it over the years for the listeners who might not be familiar with it?
Well, I got into Apple scripting when AppleScript was introduced with System 7, back in the day. Because I was looking for a way to automate a couple of the tasks on my computer that I found tedious and repetitive. So I stumbled on AppleScript and went out and bought a book and figured out how to do a little bit of it. What I found was, since I was doing a lot of stuff with music and audio, I downloaded a great program called SoundJam back in 1999, 2000, when the MP3 revolution was starting to take off on the Mac. And SoundJam, thanks to its wonderful developers, was Apple scriptable, meaning that you could write Apple scripts to control SoundJam to do, things that either SoundJam could do already or to go beyond its functionality. So I started dabbling with Apple scripting SoundJam, and I came up with a few scripts that I thought were beneficial, and rather than post them on like Version Tracker or someplace like that where, Version Tracker is really for applications and bigger deals. I didn't think Apple Scripts really deserved to be up there. So I put up my own site that had maybe a dozen SoundJam Apple scripts that, you know, created new playlists and moved track information around and stuff like that. Well, as you may know, SoundJam was picked up by Apple and turned into iTunes. And so I found I immediately had an iTunes Apple scripting site. And when iTunes actually became scriptable, I think it was version 2 of iTunes that eventually implemented the Apple Script Dictionary and the Apple Scripts architecture. I just started writing Apple Scripts for iTunes, and people started coming to the site looking for automation and actually helping me out with giving me some of their scripts. And I started writing how to write your own Apple Scripts for iTunes and just having fun with the whole thing. Like I said, originally the site started off very small. I didn't expect it to take off at all. But within a couple of days of the site being up, I found that I was getting really heavy Google hits and said, uh-oh, this is going to be a part-time job. So that's kind of what it's turned into. It's turned into a fun little hobby where I get to interact with a lot of great creative people and a lot of people who like you say, you're not an Apple Script guy, but you like the functionality and you like the automation aspect of the Apple Scripts for iTunes, and that's the way it's worked out. And it's been a lot of fun. It's just a wonderful experience.
Well, and from what I've seen, the site has, well, it's obviously, it's grown now because you've got some automator scripts, and you don't just limit your Apple Scripts to iTunes.
No, it's the Apple Scripts that I write for iTunes, I mean, essentially 99% of the stuff on the site is for iTunes, but there are also scripts that interact with other iApps, for instance, iCal and iChat and Mail and things like that. So the focus is pretty much iTunes, but you do get into other areas of Apple Script. That's the thing about Apple Script. I mean, once you've learned how to script one particular application, you can't help but start migrating to other applications and learning Apple Script automation techniques for those applications. For instance, you start doing stuff in iTunes and you say, well, I need to Apple Script the Finder so I can move some files around, and pretty soon you start, you know, getting this whole Apple Script galaxy going in around your computer, and it's addicting. So that's kind of how the site has evolved as well. It's just kind of opened up to a lot more about Apple Script.
As of this morning, you advertised 364 scripts, and
yeah,
that's an impressive collection, especially given that so many of them I think are useful. They're not esoteric, if you will.
They're it's amazing, and it's not a tribute to the creativity of the people who write the scripts. It's a tribute to the flexibility of the Apple Script architecture in iTunes. Thank goodness when Apple bought SoundJam, they kept the Apple scripting architecture there, which was already very flexible. And since then, they've added a few more things that you can do with iTunes, but there isn't any wasted Apple scripting, you know? People will send me repetitive scripts to post, and I'll say, well, we kind of already have a script that does that. But you can do so many things with Apple Script in iTunes. That explains the number of scripts you see posted on the site. Right now, it's up to 364. And every so often, I'll say, well, I guess we've gone about as far as we can go. And then, you know, another dozen will turn up because someone, you know, has a special need to change track information or to export information or to do whatever they need to do with iTunes, and suddenly you've got another dozen, another 20 up there. So it's amazed me as much as anybody else.
Now, you also just slid by something I want to make sure that the listeners understand. Even though you are an Apple Script guy, you don't write all the scripts on here. You accept submissions.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I have a great little core of correspondents who will occasionally write something and send stuff in. And people also who have said, well, you know, I downloaded a script from your site and I needed it to do something else, so I modified it a little. And so they'll send me that. And if it makes sense, then I'll post that. So, yeah, absolutely. We take submissions, although I have written about 90% of them. But I don't know why I've written 90% of them. People should be writing their own and sending them in. But usually what happens is, since since I'm so out there, since I'm so upfront and so available, most of the scripts that I write, a lot of them recently, have been based on suggestions. For instance, people will say, I don't know anything about AppleScript, but can you write something that exports the artwork to the album folder? Sure. And so a week later, I'll say, that sounds interesting. I'll give that a shot. And it's just as much fun for me to write it and have a script work and work for people as it is for the people who, you know, request it to begin with.
Doug, what's your position on Automator? I know there's some Automator scripts being added to the site. Are you finding that as popular as the AppleScript scripts, and do you think it's something that will grow, or how do you intend to, I guess, keep it integrated into the site?
Well, Automator is kind of run by the AppleScript department, if you will, at Apple. And so I was initially asked if I would write some Automator actions when they were just about ready to introduce it, which I was happy to do. It's difficult to write Automator actions. You have to get into Xcode, and you have to do some, you know, there's some particular things you have to do. It's not as easy to write an Automator action as it is to write an Apple script. So I haven't done as much with Automator as I have with the scripting. However, my general view about Automator is it's a fine addition to the Mac OS, especially since there are people out there who are writing some great actions. And if you want to take a little bit of time to put those actions together and create a workflow, it works out great. There doesn't seem to be as much interest in Automator for iTunes as there does seem to be for things like BB Edit or Pro Tools or other applications that fit into a larger workflow. But there are some great iTunes Automator actions, including, you know, My 7, and I got it on the list here. Write some more Automator actions. But generally, I've found that the Apple scripts can do just as well as the Automator actions. I think Apple also wants to improve Automator and do a lot more with it in the future. So I'm hopeful that Automator catches on. I know a lot of people are really digging it, but I just haven't done as much with it as I have with AppleScript, because I can crank out an Apple script in a few minutes, whereas to write an action, it does take a little bit more time and a lot more testing.
Doug, I know there's some people out there listening that are going to say, well, I'm still not sure about this. I've heard about AppleScript. I sort of have a general idea, but it really isn't going to work for me. And you and I both know that's not true. Give them an idea of some of the cool things that you can do with AppleScript that really don't involve a lot of their interaction other than just downloading it and putting it into their system.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much it. You download it and you put it into your system, and you can activate it from a menu in iTunes. And, for instance, a very basic script we have that is very basic. It just switches the track name with the artist name. Sometimes you'll download some file information from the CDDB, and they have switched those things. Well, this Apple script, you select some tracks, you go to the script menu, you click on Switch Artist with Track, and boom! For all the tracks you've selected, the name of the song is reversed with the name of the artist. Things like that. I mean, it's very simple to use Apple scripts, and I realize it's difficult to say that, but it's not. They're sort of like plugins. They're just sort of like extra menu commands. It's so simple to use, and you're right. It's very difficult to explain to the person who has never used them before. Well, it's really easy to use, but it's really easy to use. And as far as writing them goes, I think what happens is people start using them, and then they open them up in Script Editor, and they say, hey, this really doesn't look that complicated. I don't have to know, I don't have to have a Harvard engineering degree or a degree in computer science to write Apple scripts. It's a very English-like programming language. The verbs and the nouns and the commands are very easy to pick up and use. And I wouldn't, if someone has just a feeling that they can automate something on their system, they should definitely give it a shot and have a look. There's tons of information on the internet. There are tons of great books on how to get started. And I think the learning curve is a bit steep for the first day or so. But once you start using Apple scripts regularly, whether you've written them or you're using a third party, you start saying to yourself, where the heck have I been? Why haven't I been using these all along? Because your workflow is definitely chopped down. And as a friend of mine likes to say, you know, you cut down on the repetitive stress disorders that can happen, because who likes to click 15 buttons when you only have to run one Apple script?
Yeah, one of the great things about your site is you have a top 11 downloads. There must be a reason for 11. I don't know why.
Well, the 11, that's from Spinal Tap. These 11.
Got it. Okay.
So, in fact, if you click, well, I don't know, this is a secret, this is almost like an Easter egg. If you click on the column that says top 11 downloads, if you click on the number 11, you will go to the Internet Movie Database page that has the quote from This is Spinal Tap. I just thought 11 was just kind of a funny thing to do.
Yeah, that's good. I had not noticed the Easter egg. That's cool. I just did it. But the top 11 downloads right now are Find Album Artwork with Google, Make Bookmarkable, Import iPod Audio Files, Super Remove Dead Tracks. That sounds impressive. CDDB Safari Kit, Import Selected iPod Tracks, Corral iTunes Dupes, Google Lyric Search, Track Splicer, Remove Duplicate Tracks from Playlist, and Find Songs Without Artwork. And those are all things that just by their names, you can understand what they do and in most cases, why you would want to do them.
Absolutely. One of the great things about writing an Apple script is you can, you know, define pretty much what the thing does, like a menu command, because it shows up more or less as a menu command in iTunes. When I first started, I tried to come up with like cute names for things, like the way some people, you know, come up with cute names for their applications. But then I realized you've got to have a descriptive title. Otherwise, one, people aren't going to know what it does. And two, when you see it in the script menu, you're going to say, well, what the heck did I download that for and what does it do? So I've tried to have some descriptive names in there and make sure that people understand what they're going to do.
Well, Doug, it's a fun site, I think, to wander through, especially if you're an iTunes enthusiast. But even if you're not, see what other scripts are there and check them out. And don't be afraid of Apple scripts. If you ever are curious, this is the place to go to find some that I think not only you will find useful, but you'll be able to use without scaring yourself and without breaking anything. There's nothing to be afraid of here.
Well, that's how I've tried to keep the site. I've tried to keep it as friendly and as searchable as possible. I didn't want to make it so that it frightened people off, and I generally assume that the people coming to the site are newbies to some degree. So I try to when I write things up, I try to be gentle, and I try not to get overly technoid about stuff. I try to make it as easy as possible because it really is easy. There's no sense in making it much more difficult than it is. And while experienced AppleScript people, I mean, these are the people who write stuff professionally and creating workflows and that kind of thing, this site is not for them. This site is for the person who's just getting started, and the information that I put up, I try to make it as easy as possible to use so that people aren't scared away. I mean, half of the site is about evangelizing AppleScript because it is so amazing. I mean, it will change your life. It will enhance the quality of your life without question.
Doug, before we go, I want to make sure that we also cover some of the other things that you're into, because you do a podcast as well, and you are also a professional voice talent.
Yeah, when I'm not doing the AppleScript stuff, I'm freelancing doing voiceover work for radio commercials, TV commercials, flash presentations. That's the kind of thing that I normally do, and that's how I make my money. But all of that, of course, is tied into the Internet as well. I spend about 10 hours a day in front of the computer, and I'm online all the time. But, yeah, I am an audio guy. I spent 20 years in radio, and, I mean, that's how I first got hooked into MP3s and audio players and audio on the Mac to begin with, because I produce my stuff on Macs. I use Pro Tools and all kinds of other audio software. And so AppleScript helps me there, too, to a certain degree. AppleScript helps me with my podcast. What I do is I just record the thing, and then I have a huge AppleScript that just puts everything all together, and all I do is push the button, and here's the audio, and here's the XML file, and here's where I want it to go, and puts it all together, and I just sit back and eat a sandwich.
And the podcast is about AppleScripts.
Yeah, the podcast is always about AppleScript. Generally, I come out with a new one about once a month. I've been trying to do them more frequently, but what I do is I answer some questions from correspondents. I list some of the new AppleScripts we've posted. I try to list as many tips as I possibly can. Any news about AppleScript, for instance, we just had iTunes 5 and iTunes 6 come out, and there have been some AppleScript additions and enhancements and bug fixes in that, and I try to bring people up to date on what's new with AppleScripting iTunes, and, and generally just try to make it as interesting and as entertaining as possible.
Well, I'd say you do a pretty good job of it. The site is so well designed. It's fun to visit. It's one of those that you want to go and explore when you have some free time. Or you can go and use when you have a specific thing you want to do, and especially in iTunes. You know, go and see if Doug has a script for it before I have to go do this manually.
Chances are we do. I mean, it's amazing. People will, email me, do you have a script that, well, like I just mentioned earlier, switches the artist name with the song title? Yep, it's been there. We've been there. We've been doing it for a long time. So, generally, if you want to do something in iTunes that you weren't sure that you could do before, check out the site, because chances are someone has written an Apple script that will do it for you.
Well, the site is dougscripts.com. And we've been talking to Doug Adams, the designer and operator of Doug Scripts. Doug, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on this first edition of Mac Voices. I'm sure the listeners got a lot out of it. I know I did. And we'll have you back again soon when there's some exciting new Apple Script news so you can update us.
I'd be happy to be a part of it. It was a lot of fun. And thanks for asking, Chuck.
As the final part of the transition from the old show, I'd like to let you know about another new show that I'm involved with and encourage you to check that one out as well, and that's Mac Notables. Mac Notables is where you will hear from the Mac experts you really want to hear from. The Mac Notables panel is one of the finest groups of Mac experts ever assembled into one audio program and includes Christopher Breen of PlaylistMag.com, Brian Chaffin, the editor of the Mac Observer and the iPod Observer, Jim Dalrymple, the editor online for MacCentral.com, Adam Angst of Tidbits and Take Control, Tanya Angst of Tidbits and Take Control, Andy Anacco of the Chicago Sun-Times and Macworld Magazine, Mac troubleshooting expert Ted Landau, Bob Dr. Mac Levitis, and Dennis Sellers, the chief maximizer of Maximum News. I have the privilege of working with this team to bring you their thoughts, advice, and commentary about the world of Apple, the Mac, and beyond. The first editions are online now, so surf over to MacNotables.com and subscribe, or do a search on MacNotables in the iTunes Music Store. And this wraps up the first edition of Mac Voices. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have thoughts or comments on the show, drop me an email at chuck@MacVoices.com. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any of our upcoming shows. I'm Chuck Joyner, and I'll be back again soon with the next edition of Mac Voices.